It's the TED Radio Hour from NPR. I'm Manoush Zomorodi. And our story today begins one winter night in 2013 in an isolated area of Scotland.
A small, like a hamlet, called Loch Eilet, fairly near the west coast of Scotland. So, yeah, a very remote place.
This is Kate Stone. She's a physicist and the founder of an electronics company. But that night, she was on vacation.
Some of my close friends, we spent the little time between Christmas and New Year in an Airbnb. And we went out to the pub, drank lots of Guinness, and some locals were playing music with their guitars and violins and things. And we listened to the music. And then they invited us to go back to their place, which was a little shed in the garden where they played more music and drank more whiskey. So we said yes, and we followed our Pied Piper through the dark woods at midnight.
I mean, it sounds like the perfect evening.
It was perfect. It was all going well.
And then something completely out of the dark happened.
Something out of the dark happened, yes. I shouldn't really laugh. I think kind of what happened is the locals walked a little too fast, disappeared into the darkness. My friends fell behind, and I tried to be that person that stayed in the middle to keep the two groups together. So I ended up on my own in the darkness.
The next thing Kate knew,
I remember just feeling a massive thud hitting my chest, and then a second thud, and then falling to my knees, and then realizing there was a hole in my throat from where the deer's antler had gone.
A stag, a deer with massive antlers, had mauled Kate.
And I found out later that it stopped 2 millimeters before my spinal cord. And as I tried to call for help, it was really more of a gargle.
Did you realize what had happened?
I was conscious for 40 minutes. It took 20 minutes for an ambulance to come, you know. And my friend came to my side, and the one thing she said to me was, just breathe. So I took my friend's advice, and I put all my attention onto breath. Lie very still and focus on the next breath in. And then when you get there, focus on the next breath out. And then I ask myself the question of, like, you know, am I happy with how I've lived my life? And I'm like, you know, oh, well, I wish it was a bit longer, you know. And it's like, it's as if my life was like, you know, a TV show, a series. And it's like, like, I'm the protagonist, like, I'm the main character in my show. And they've written me out as a great season finale. Like,
come on, a couple more seasons.
Exactly. So, yeah, so my end of season finale was me dying in the forest floor. But I'm like, I'm really proud of who I am, what I've done. Okay, it's time to go out, but I'm going to go out calmly.
But you didn't go out. You ended up being airlifted.
Yes. They operated on me, reconstructed my throat, and then they decided to put me in an induced coma. So, yeah, it took a while to get back to reality. It was a slow process.
You've come to in the hospital. You know what's happened. You know you've got a long road of recovery. When did you first know that this had made the newspapers? This had been in the press. Your crazy freak accident, you know, tabloid papers love that kind of stuff. When did you figure that out?
Yeah, that was a few weeks. You know, I gave myself the sort of the luxury of not being on an iPad or any social media or anything for probably, my memory is about a month, but that, you know, that could be wrong. So I tried to really keep away from that. Said to my sister, has there been any, like, has it been in the news or anything? And she's like, oh, a little bit. She didn't tell me that newspapers wrote headlines such as sex swap scientist gored by stag.
I just want to make it clear to the listener what ended up happening, which was that multiple newspapers, national papers like the Daily Mail, the Sun, your accident was featured in all of them. But what they did was put it into the headlines. They called you Sex Swap Kate, some of them did. And in some ways, they made the story about your gender, not the accident. And I guess just explain to people how it felt to read that.
So, yes, I'm a trans woman, but calling me a sex swap scientist is derogatory and not pertinent to the story, but it implies that it is. And it tells everyone who sees that, which is probably a few million people, that when you see someone that's trans, you label them as someone that's trans to say, you know, hey, tranny, I'm talking to you, you know, when it's nothing to do with that. It's offensive. It's absolutely inappropriate. But worst of all to me is it tells a nation that this is how you refer to a trans person. Mm. They wanted to know former name, dates of operation, what operations, you know, they made that part of the story. It's not part of the story. It's absolutely irrelevant. You know, I was lay on a forest floor, gored by a stag, and they wanted to sensationalize it. You know, my children had to leave their home because of the camera crews outside. They had to leave where they were living to go somewhere else because people were interested in this and wanted to ask inappropriate questions of people that knew me. And so I was like, I have to do something. I know I can make a difference. I know I can't stop them from doing this, but I know I can make them less likely to do it.
For Kate Stone, this invasion of privacy, well, it felt like the world had let her down. And as much as she wanted to lean on her family, her friends, her community, she realized she needed to take matters into her own hands. So today on the show, DIY. Stories and ideas about taking on institutions, companies, and stereotypes in ingenious ways. Because sometimes you just need to do it yourself. Back in her hospital bed, recovering from her injuries, Kate began strategizing on how to confront the UK press for sensationalizing her accident, and especially her identity. A warning, in this section, we will mention suicide.
I felt an overwhelming sense of responsibility and duty, and I'd seen what happens to other people. What came to my mind was, I think it might have been the previous year, a newspaper wrote a piece about a trans woman called Lucy Meadows who transitioned as a school teacher. And they wrote in that the headline, not only is she in the wrong body, but she's in the wrong job. And she then committed suicide.
Oh, gosh.
And it's heartbreaking. And so I was like, I know I can do something. And if I don't and someone else dies, that's on my hands as far as I was concerned. So I knew I had to. And, you know, my kind of science brain is like, identify the goal, which is reduce the chances of them doing this again to someone else. Okay. Identify, you know, the resources I have at hand, which is connecting with them, communicating with them, helping them see what they've done is wrong. And then identify what this is going to cost me. And what this is going to cost me is my privacy. I take pride in talking about who I am as a scientist, being outside of that, open about being trans, but not talking about it. And I only don't talk about it because I want people to know, but I want them also to know that I'm a pretty awesome creative scientist. You know, I want to be open about being trans in a way where people who maybe have never met a trans woman and maybe are a little bigoted for one moment might be, wow, I hope my children turn out to be like her. You know, I want to be like that kind of role model. So for me to have to sacrifice my privacy and tell 10 million people, that's the price I will pay to, you know, hopefully achieve my goal.
Here's Kate Stone on the TED stage.
I'm a kindness ninja. I don't really know what a ninja does, but to me, they slip through the shadows, crawl through the sewers, skip across the rooftops, and before you know it, they're behind you. They don't turn up with an army or complain, and they're laser focused on a plan. And so I didn't attack them, and they were defenseless. And I wrote kind and calm letters to these newspapers. And the Sun newspaper, the kind of Fox News of the UK, thanked me for my reasoned approach. And I asked for no apology, no retraction, no money, just an acknowledgement that they broke their own rules and what they did was just wrong. And on this journey, I started to learn who they are and they began to learn who I am. And we actually became friends. And after 3 months, they all agreed and the statements were published on a Friday. And that was the end of that, or so they thought. On the Saturday, I went on the evening news and with the headline, 6 national newspapers admit they are wrong. And the anchor said to me, but don't you think it's our job as journalists to sensationalize a story? And I said, I was lay on a forest floor, gored by a stag. Is that not sensational enough? And I was now writing the headlines, and my favourite one was the stag trampled on my throat and the press trampled on my privacy. And it was the most read piece of BBC News online that day, and I was kind of having fun.
I mean, you didn't ask for a retraction, right?
No.
You didn't ask for... Did you ask for an apology? Like, what did you actually ask for in your letters?
So in the UK, the press is self-regulated. So most of the press sign up to the Independent Press Standards Organization. And there's a set of rules by which they have to abide by about reporting around, diversity or around gambling or suicide or all those types of things. So I just asked them to acknowledge that it was wrong and acknowledge that it broke the rules. And I asked for that to be published in the Press Gazette, which is an industry newspaper that's really not read by the public. But I got it. I wanted it on record. And they responded in a really kind and a slightly shocked way. You know, Philippa Kennedy, the ombudsman for The Sun, was like, wow, we actually really respect the way you've approached us. They couldn't understand why I wasn't angry. And I think I felt a sense that other people, maybe in my community, were angry at me too for not using it as an opportunity to get people fired or to actually bring a formal complaint and get a judgment against them, get a ruling made against them. I just didn't feel for me that was the most effective thing to do. I just like to say I'm not an angry activist. I'm a happy healer.
That's a nice way to put it.
Because I can see myself in these people. Like, I just feel there, but for the grace of God, you know? Like, I can see myself in these other people. I can see why they have their perspective from the journey that they've taken.
In a minute, how Kate's budding relationship with reporters evolved. On the show today, ideas about doing it yourself. I'm Manoush Zomorodi, and you're listening to the TED Radio Hour from NPR. Stay with us. It's the TED Radio Hour from NPR. I'm Manoush Zomorodi, and on the show today, DIY. Ideas about rolling up your sleeves and fixing things yourself. And we were just talking to physicist and engineer Kate Stone. Kate had a terrible accident in 2013, which the British media sensationalized, along with her transgender identity.
What I saw is on the Daily Mail online article, I saw like 180 comments, and 179 of those comments were saying, the way you've spoken about her and spoken about her being trans is inappropriate. Mm. So I saw an industry that was out of touch and old-fashioned. So it was really about holding a mirror up, and all it was going to take is a gentle nudge and done in a kind way.
So you got all six newspapers that had written about you to admit that they were wrong. And then what?
What happened was I was encouraged by the newspaper industry to apply to this committee that writes these rules, which is formed of the editors, chaired by, at the time, the Daily Mail editor. So you have this room filled with the editors who make these decisions, deciding what their own rules should be. It was recommended to them that they include three members of the public, and they put me on that panel. Hmm. And 6 years later, I still sit on that panel.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. In the room with the editors who respect me as a member of the public, who has a brain and can contribute, usually and nearly exclusively about things that are nothing to do with being trans. I'm just a smart woman in the room who has a seat at the table. That makes a difference. And, you know, people can show and say how they still do some of these things. But I know, you know, a report was commissioned and it showed that one of the biggest impact on the press in the last decade to do with trans reporting was what I did. So I know it made a difference. But I just don't claim it changed everything.
No, but it goes to show that one person taking charge of a situation and being willing to sacrifice yet more of their privacy can have an impact.
Yeah. I think there's three things that decides what goes in the newspaper. One is what the editor decides. The other is the fact that you click on it and read it as a reader. And the other is that you buy the products that are advertised in that newspaper. And as members of the public, we have to realize we hold the power over 2 out of 3 of those levers. We can choose to not buy a product and we can choose to not click. Every time you click, you are the reason that thing is there. So, you know, that we do have the power. We have 2/3 of the power.
Do you see yourself as an activist? Because there are some people who might think, well, this approach, one woman doing it herself, that can't be scaled. She needs to join, you know, organizations, activist organizations that are trying to change laws, that are trying to change not just the way one industry works, but the way society works. What would you say to that?
I think it depends on the circumstance, right? You know, sometimes joining the movement, being an activist by joining another group is the right thing to do. But sometimes, you know, we can be in such an independent moment where we can see how we can make an impact by doing something directly ourselves, by not aligning us with other people and how other people do things, that sometimes the most effective way is to do it yourself. And honestly, personally, I'd rather be that one person that tries to make a change that no one ever notices or hears, and that change never happens, than the millionth person that joins the million person march. Because, you know, the biggest movements potentially can come from the individual who just says enough. And so we should not be oppressed by our own feeling of insignificance. We should always speak out, even when we tell ourselves no one's going to care, because it actually makes a difference. I kind of believe in like what I call a quantum state of mind, which is everything is possible, everything has a probability. Are those newspapers going to be mean to me? Probably. But probably means they might not be as well. Everything in the future is a possibility. And our job is to try and change the odds so that in the moment, they're more likely to do the thing you want them to do. And that's the way I look at the world.
That's physicist and engineer Kate Stone. She's the founder of the tech company Novalia. And you can see both of her TED Talks at TED.com.